Hello, and welcome to We Speak CVE, a free podcast from the CVE program. On this podcast, we'll talk with people from the cybersecurity community about what else, cybersecurity and vulnerability management, and the CVE catalog of vulnerabilities. If you didn't know, the CVE program's mission is to identify, define, and catalog publicly disclosed cybersecurity vulnerabilities.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the CVE podcast. My name is Shannon Sabins, and I'm your host, and I'm a CVE board member. I have with me today Kent Lenfield. He's another board member. Kent is with Trellix, has been on the board and involved in CVE for many years. I'll let Kent introduce himself.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity here, Shannon. Yes, Kent Lenfield. I work for Trellix, and I have been on the board since the original CVE board formed in 1999. Seen a lot of things through the years, and I think some of that is what we're here to talk about.
Yeah, there was a reason that I wanted to have you on the podcast. Recently, you came to the CVE Outreach Working Group, of which I'm the co-chair, and you pointed out some things to me that I think that I kind of took for granted or had not fully thought through, and I frankly loved what you had to say, and I loved it so much. I've been chasing you to do the podcast, and I want to dig in and talk about that. At a high level, what you said to me was, we've talked to people about some of the changes that we're making as a program, and we're talking to people about we're talking to CNAs, vendors and other CNA numbering authorities about how to interact with our programmatic changes to help them scale their CVE output and vulnerability advisories, but we hadn't really talked about or to consumers of CVE and how these changes will be meaningful for them. And I thought your passion on the topic was really beneficial. And I loved the things that you said, and I took a lot of notes. But I wanted to invite you to talk about it. So first, would you tell the listeners a little bit about some of the changes that we've been making in terms of how we interact, how the CNA organization interacts in terms of feeding back CVEs? Can we talk a little bit about that to start, and then we can come around to how it serves those who are consuming CVE?
All right, sounds good. First off, let me give you a little background, because I think background is important to sort of set the stage. As mentioned, I've been with the CVE program since the very beginning. And during that time, this has been a program that is evolving. It has constantly evolved. Initially, when the program started, all of the board members were required to test all the vulnerabilities individually in our own networks to then vote on whether or not these were vulnerabilities we wanted to list in CVE. Well, that didn't scale very well, let's put it that way. As the hockey stick of vulnerabilities started to grow, we needed a better mechanism to do that. And then we came up with a candidate kind of numbering authority, the CANs. If you see something that looks like a CVE that had CAN instead of CVE, that was a candidate for a CVE. Those two didn't really work. We were just trying different things to figure out what it was that would be most beneficial to the process, to improving the process. With a lot of what we've done in the past, we've been reliant on a hub and spoke model of utilizing MITRE at the time. And I'm not hammering on MITRE at all. It's quite the opposite. I appreciate all the great work and resources they put in over the years for CVE. But we got to the point where we realized we had to do this in a federated kind of an approach. We had to create a federated model for supporting CVE if we really wanted to make this useful from the standpoint of the vulnerability management community. We in 2016 decided that we had to restructure the program in a lot of different ways. We had to provide things that we weren't providing before to our contributors, the CNAs, the CV numbering authorities, and as well as additional capabilities to the downstream user community, who's the reason that CVE exists in the first place. So this whole aspect of evolution and new capabilities and trying to find ways to come up with additional valuable solutions that will assist the vulnerability management practitioners that are out there. It's very core to what we're trying to do within the program. So we have, and just to sort of bring a bit more up to speed, we put in place automation, CV services, and additional automation tools, and it's just not stopping. It's just, you know, really starting to flow, which is a good thing, to support the federated model. So we have the ability for CNAs to reserve automated IDs. There's no human involved like there was in the past. We have the ability for them to also update the this is all with authorization and authentication, but we have the ability for them to update the CNA's updated security advisories information into the CV record. So one of the things that we truly believe is that the CV program is at a really positive intersection from the standpoint of the CNAs who are reporting vulnerability and associated information with the downstream user community who consumes that. So trying to get as much information as possible early on, when the security advisory is going out, when the CV is being populated and published to the CV corpus for downstream use, it's important that we gather as much information as possible. And I think we'll be talking about data as a foundation, but for all intent and purposes, our purpose here was to try to evolve the program to a point where we could capture that information as early as possible, incorporate it into the CVE corpus so that downstream mechanisms, other services, think the National Vulnerability Database, or databases like it internally that may be in your company, could leverage that information immediately and get more accurate information at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we have talked a lot about within the CVE program about how to talk to people, how to talk to the community, you know, that we're not the program of old, that we are making plans to scale. And the messaging that I didn't want was, hey, we're shedding the baggage of the past. The messaging that I get excited about is, this is what we're doing for folks, and this is what benefits folks should expect to see. And when you started talking to me about enriching data as early in the advisory process as possible, and what that makes possible, some of which I had thought about quite a lot, and some of which I had not, I did feel really excited about that message for people. So should we talk more about
absolutely.
Yeah, the opportunity for the opportunities that the consistency in the data present for all kinds of data enrichment, I guess, is where I want to go next.
Okay. So, We were very, sort of, you learn lessons as time goes on and you experience things and the like. And one of the things that we were learning was that we did have access to CNAs at the point in which they were most knowledgeable about their vulnerabilities. They were publishing security advisories about it. And the old CVEs really basically were an ID, a description, and a reference. And while useful in, as we've seen, it's become very useful in being able to identify these vulnerabilities uniquely so that we could talk about them and understand what we're talking about. There's that opportunity to enrich the data quite a bit beyond those three pieces of content, and to be able to potentially create additional value to the vulnerability management community. One of the things that we've done with our formats, which we're in the process of changing formats, we have a JSON format today that we call it JSON 5, which is actually enabling a lot more structure to the data itself. One of the things that the previous formats, they were not very structured. So it made it a little harder to automate some of the aspects. It made it a little harder to interpret some of the information, especially around version information, those types of things for products that were affected. So there was a need to put some structure behind it. So with the JSON 5 format that is now being used and will by the end of the year become the sort of predominant format we'll be using. It's important that we understand that there was a reason we did that. And we did that because there is a great deal of information the vendors have, the software producers have, that come out of security advisories that could be leveraged and put into a format that is a little more structured and a little more expanded. The format allows for additional data to be put in from the standpoint of what we call authorized data publishers. And in the past, you always had to be a CVE numbering authority. There had to be some scope or scale of what you were going to be reporting CVEs on, assigning CVEs on. But we've come up with an idea that, and we're starting to actually implement it right now, that there is another class of users who have data that is extremely valuable to the downstream community. And we would like to make sure that we have the capability to address that, to add that, to include that. One of those, for example, and I'll talk about a couple examples, but one of those is translations. CVE is not a U.S.-centric kind of program like it was before. There's, I don't even know what the numbers are today, but there's 30-something countries and 200-plus CNAs that are, and that's expanding weekly, no kidding. And as such, we want to make sure that we're looking at this in the right form. There is a base language. English is considered the base language, but other translations could easily be added, and in some cases already are. But we want to do that in a structured way that can be leveraged by vulnerability management tools in the future. Additional, one of the things that we're also seeing with an ADP perspective is there are some really good sources of information that could be included in the future. This isn't something that we're yet doing today. We're still in a very much of proof of concept for some of the initial ADP pilot programs. But being able to incorporate different scoring mechanisms, right now we're seeing multiple means for scoring that are coming up. It used to be there was only one CVSS, and the worst thing you had to worry about was which version of CVSS you were using. Today, there are additional mechanisms that are, potentially we'll be looking at them down the road from a more predictive nature, from a more a different attribute-based approach to scoring, as opposed to the base score kind of thing that the NVD puts out. And then there's other types of enriched data, like the known exploited vulnerability list that CISA has been putting out. This is actually something that the Europeans are have put into their NIS2 directive, that they want to have that incorporated in as well into their vulnerability database. So there's a growing need for the kinds of identification of which CVEs are really being exploited in the wild. And if we have authoritative sources that can produce that, then we can incorporate that. In fact, are in a pilot to incorporate that into the CVE program. So down the road, you could actually see how additional capabilities from the standpoint of how do you score? Do you use a predictive mechanism? Do you use an attribute-based mechanism? Do you use a base score kind of CVSS mechanism? Do you focus on KEV? There's a lot of different ways that tooling could be produced to make all of those useful in creating a real prioritization capability that today just doesn't exist, but in the future would be a benefit to the vulnerability management community from a standpoint of operationally seeing how they could leverage those types of things to more accurately focus on what the real risks their organizations are.
Well, you gave me a lot to dig into. You talked about speed, you talked about scale, you talked about enrichment, you talked about translation, you touched on ADPs, authorized data publishers. Is that a thing yet? What's the roadmap there?
This is one of those things where sometimes your ideas get well ahead of your implementations. We've been trying to get ADPs in place for about a year now, but there are some things that we had to get in place first, service-wise, before we were able to actually take advantage of those concepts and those ideas. We have accomplished that. We have put those services in place. We currently have two pilots in progress right now around authorized data publishers. And that is...
So this is the opportunity for a third party to enrich the CVE data within the new format.
Yes, there will be, but this will be a very restrictive kind of process in approving something like this. We're not just opening this up to the world kind of perspective where anybody can come in and say, well, I want to put in my company's information. No, that's not what this is about. This is about CVE data that currently exists. This is about enriching that data. This is about adding value to that data for the downstream vulnerability management community, our stakeholders, and to make sure that for all intent and purposes, we're adding capabilities and enriched data that can be leveraged in different ways to address certain aspects of the vulnerability management operations that are truly needed.
Cool. And you talked about downstream data, you talked about vulnerability management tools, and you kind of touched on how those tools could consume this data and be used to, for example, help. You also talked about CVSS and other scoring, but help consumers prioritize addressing vulnerabilities in their environment. You also talked about known exploited vuln list. You talked a little bit about Kevin, and I talk to you all the time, and Kev is something you talk about a lot. But I don't know that everybody knows. Well, I don't know if everybody knows that much about the KEV data, and do we want to dig more into that and the future and being able to identify which CVs are
Absolutely.
Exploited? I mean, we've kind of talked about priorities maybe being two based in Though there's a lot to like about CVSS, but priorities may be too based on CVSS today.
Yeah, the priorities absolutely are based too much on CVSS today. And sadly, they're based on too much of just the base score aspect that comes out of NIST for all intent and purposes. The vendors supply it, but seems the community believes that NIST is independent and can do a real good job of doing that, even though they can't see the whole picture because they don't have access to the source code. It has to be public. But in the case of KEV, that brings another dimension to how we look at what we should be prioritizing. Of course, everybody looks at CVSS and says, well, if it's a 7 or higher, I need to address it rather quickly. If it's an 8 or higher, I have a hair on fire situation I need to do something about. Reality is that's one dimension of trying to decide what you're going to prioritize in your environment. The other aspect is what's actually being exploited in the wild. And we've discussed this for quite a while through the years. You know, this has been one of the things that we've really, you know, tried to work on, but we could never really get an authoritative, resourced organization that would be able to support something like this. There was always, you know, ExploitDB and various other older kinds of mechanisms that you could go and take a look and you could look at stuff and the like. But from a standpoint of integrating something into a CVE data feed, you really need someone that is going to be there going forward. The Department of Homeland Security, CISA, Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, has produced a known exploited vulnerabilities list based on CVE, of course, and they are, in the fact, when they find software in the wild that is exploiting a specific CVE, they will get it added to the KEV. This is, for all intent and purposes, a real valuable service from my perspective, because it does change and it adds another dimension to what you're looking at when you're prioritizing things. So if you've got two vulnerabilities, one of them's a CVSS 7.5 and it doesn't have anything on the KEV, okay, that's one thing from a consideration perspective. If you've got a CVSS 7.5 and there is exploited code in the wild for it, that might give you pause to maybe prioritize that just a bit earlier than the other one. Both of them should be addressed. Don't get me wrong. We should address all of our vulnerabilities. But the reality is sometimes we're short-staffed. We don't have the resources we need, but we do need to be able to try to do our best to protect our organizations. And in doing so, knowing what's being exploited in the wild is again, another dimension. So having that information coming from CISA and being incorporated into the CVE data means that in the not too distant future, and it's coming, in the not too distant future, we will have the ability to provide that information to downstream practitioners who can then utilize that in deciding and prioritizing their own remediation and mitigation processes.
Totally, totally agree with everything you just said. And I feel really excited with the work we're doing, the program that is going to allow us to scale, that is going to allow us to support CNAs globally, that is allowing us a speed of services and an enrichment of data that we did not have before. JSON 5 is more extensible. So I feel pretty excited that we're headed in the right direction. And I really agree with your point to me that we need to show people not only the specific changes, but the benefits to them. I feel excited that this data can be consumed by vulnerability management tools and have a meaningful outcomes for organizations who may be struggling to prioritize vulnerability work in-house. So Kent, I want to thank you very, very much for joining us today. I think this was great. I love that you brought this content to the podcast. And for sure, I want to do more with it and help each other do more outreach to those parties who can benefit from all the changes that we're making at CDE. So just thank you so much.
And thank you, Shannon. I appreciate the opportunity. Just leave folks with the one final thought. If you were very aware of what CVE was 5 years ago, you need to pay attention to what CVE is today. It's not your grandfather's program anymore.
Thank you, Kent. All right. And thanks, everyone, for joining us for another episode of the CVE podcast. I hope we'll be back with you soon. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on the We Speak CVE podcast, which is available for free on Buzzsprout and the CVE website. If you'd like to participate or suggest a topic, please contact us on the CVE website.